Welcome to the Gastric Health Show, where we help you achieve the happiest and healthiest version of yourself by motivating you to eat, move, sleep, and think better. Welcome, Erica, to the Gastric Health Show. We are thrilled to have you. And if you would just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in bariatrics.
Yeah, well, so I am a osteopathic surgeon who loves preventative medicine, loves the gut microbiome, and really loves obesity prevention and surgery. So I'm just so tickled that I get to do all of these things, health coaching, et cetera, through the lens of being a surgeon. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I practice in Oregon. I do a pretty busy, robust bariatric surgery practice. And then on the side is a little passion project. Me and one of my favorite dietitians teamed up together, started Art of Bariatrics. We are artofbariatrics.com and Art of Bariatrics on Facebook and Instagram. And that really is an online service catered towards treating gut health issues and also just preventing weight regain and really optimizing a person's experience long-term after bariatric surgery.
That's awesome. Giving them lots of tools.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So we are going to dig right in and kind of go into this big topic, I would say controversial, especially when you put it in the conventional world and you put it in the natural world, kind of butts heads. I kind of ride in the middle and I try to be realistic, but I know the science behind it makes me more concerned at times for certain patients based on their volume that they intake. So I'm always pushing this artificial sweetener lessening because of more and more studies that are coming out. So before we jump right into all the artificial sweeteners, why don't you briefly explain, you know, just what is the gut microbiome and why would it even matter?
Oh gosh, this is my most favorite subject of all time, because if for anybody who's ever struggled with weight and weight management and diet and been on diets, the gut microbiome is exactly why your nutrition matters. It is literally the glue that connects us all to our environment. It's the missing link, so to speak, in our scientific understanding prior to the last 20 or so years of how a healthy person is actually healthy and why not all calories are created equal. Yep. So we are a universe, if you will, each and every one of us. We are unique in our gut microbiome as we are our individual fingerprint and our individual genome. And I think why I get so excited about it is because of the sheer magnitude of the impact we have. We are home to trillions or even more, right? It's estimated that there are just as many bacteria living in the human body as there are stars in the global giant universe out there. So really too many to count. And it hasn't been until we have had technology like supercomputers and quantum computing and all of these really neat scientific technological advances where we've even really been able to start to map their function. So it's believed that we are more bacteria. Their genome, their genetic information influences ours in real time. Every 20 minutes, bacteria are replicating, dividing, dying off, and they experience very rapid genetic changes based on our environment. So not only that, but our nervous system has actually co-evolved with them. So what makes us happy, calm, relaxed, connected, good parents, good lovers, good spouses is intimately related to them being happy. And so I have a little quote, which is whatever makes us happy makes them happy. And when we're happy and thriving, then our gut microbiome is as well. And really our so many things like how we're born, our exposure to antibiotics, our exposure to food. Absolutely. So food and your mental health state and your, nervous system state, those are the two most easily modifiable things that you can do, regardless if you were born C-section or vaginally, or regardless if you had, a septic infection, we're on antibiotics for a long time, but our food choices is really the most easily intervenable way to, again, keep these microorganisms happy. And I just love bringing this information to the field of bariatric surgery, where it's traditionally been this kind of Atkins, high protein, low carb, keto kind of like lifestyle and rhetoric. But what makes your gut microbiome really happy is lots of different types of plants and lots of different types of fiber. And so we're kind of seeing this, at least I'm trying to help lead this new trend of not necessarily going purely plant-based, but again, incorporating more of this balance between, yes, protein's important and amino acids are important, but also so is this capacity for digestion and feeding these bacteria and keeping them really happy and healthy. And then also there's just this paradox that, gastric bypass kind of presents, which is a SIBO type conditioning. And so, how do we live with our bypasses? How do we live with these SIBO like mechanisms? And, how do we just ensure that we have the best possible body and we keep ourselves really happy and healthy? There's a connection between your immune system, your gut, your hormones, and your endocrine system. Bacteria can in your gut can actually determine how many calories you absorb from your food. They can regulate all the hormones that bariatric surgery really tries to correct. And then of course, we get this really beautiful short-term sort of benefit from bariatric surgery, but we all know that it's the long-term, sort of reemergence of these obesity type characteristics that then kind of reemerge. So, where the rubber meets the road, in my opinion, the most intervenable, modifiable risk factor is really how we eat, what we eat, and how we can regulate our nervous system.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I think that kind of explains the big picture of we have options. Yes, bariatric surgery has its magic and really can shift the microbiome. But then in the end, it does come down to us and our choices and how we choose to be happy or not, or, really helping our nervous system by, making that choice of being happy and setting ourselves up for, lots of good things and not just waiting for things to happen. We have that ability to do that on our own.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a really profound amount of literature really highlighting that probiotic bacteria actually influence your ability to make emotional decisions and process memories. And, that's kind of like the nuts and bolts of, who has PTSD and who doesn't, is like, how strong is that emotional memory connection? And then also what sort of internal resources do you have? So it's a layering effect. It's definitely a big picture kind of thing. And, I know wholeheartedly just how traumatized our patient population can be on various fronts. And so, yeah, I really feel like the people who need this information the most are the very people that, we try to serve in our field of bariatrics. And I couldn't be more excited to nerd out with you today and right. help teach some people some stuff.
Yeah. Now in your, what you've seen and in the research, how quickly can our microbiome shift with just our diet?
So it's interesting that nervous system peaks within 2 to 4 hours. You can have profound microbiome changes because of a really severe stress response, where people can even develop sepsis and certain bacteria strains like E. coli, right? There was just another food recall about E. coli. That's what you hear about a lot in the news. E. coli grows in human poop and animal poop, and it's very normal to be in our stool. However, it's also one of the oldest living bacteria that also can get quite angry quite quickly. And I think angry is kind of a nice way to kind of paint the picture. We call it virulent. So that virulence factor is what makes it more infectious. But anyway, so, you know, the microbiome and, you know, how it kind of weaves in. Actually, I kind of lost my train of thought there. What was the original question? Because I said
the diet, how quickly.
Oh, yes. So again, within 2 hours of a nervous system shift, it can change abruptly, often for the worse, because the bacteria are actually sensing from our body and from our environment. It's actually called quorum sensing. It's like a giant text message amber alert goes out and the bacteria just go, oh, and then those E. coli just go nuts. With dietary changes, it's more subtle. And I believe the Human Gut Microbiome Project kind of documented this, but about 4 to 6 weeks of, you know, consistent dietary changes is when, say on a stool analysis, PCR, for example, you're going to be able to see shifts in different populations of bacteria. And again, we're just barely scratching the surface here, tip of the iceberg, so to speak, which bacterial populations are important. But not only that, what's more curious is what they're doing. And so that's called metatranscriptomics. And we're actually monitoring their biochemical function. There's bacteria that ferment carbohydrates really well. There's bacteria that turn vitamin C into a bunch of, you know, beautiful things. There are certain bacteria that, you know, function mostly off of peptides and like microproteins and amino acids. And, you know, there's certain ones that do fatty acids as well. So, you know, for the layperson, yeah, carbs, protein, fat, but you know, the diversity and the amount, you know, a sweet potato, for example, is going to feed a different and stimulate a different function metabolically from these gut bacteria than say an apple will. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and again, both of them stimulate bacterial chemical making. And that's where we talk about short chain fatty acids. The short chain fatty acids are healing chemicals for the rest of our body. And they're just really, our human body is really dependent upon them. And I love the historical context too, because, you know, especially something like midwifery. Mm-hmm. Midwifery used to be done in the home, by women, for women, you know, this very kind of private thing. And then you had this modernization of medicine, a very male-driven process. They didn't wash their hands. They put women in, you know, large, you know, rooms with other women, mixing fluids, doing all sorts of things. And our, you know, outcomes got way worse. And so then we always started, you know, blaming germs. Right. We had to identify germs, then we had to blame germs, then we had to develop antibiotics. And so we just kind of got off track, I think, in terms of our view of health and, you know, humanism and connection and community. There's a big overlap with agriculture and our agricultural practices, you know, modern farming, this whole concept here of these artificial sweeteners. You know, we're talking about high fructose corn syrup and highly, highly processed chemicals that, again, just do nothing to feed the soil. The soil is actually where these microorganisms come from. In fact, one of the key treatments, or should I say palliative probiotic sources for SIBO, are soil-borne bacillus organisms. And, you know, prior to us scientifically causing these conditions and then identifying them, humans never got SIBO just by growing their own food, digging in their own dirt, you know, having their own compost, so to speak. So, that's another hobby of mine, gardening.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think that's, you know, something everyone can take a part in, whether Definitely. We realize it or not, depending on where you live, it may not be as easy for some, but I think even just getting a pot and putting it on your porch, you know, getting some sunshine and, you know, plant a tomato plant and being involved in that. And again, you are getting those organisms at a healthy level by doing that. So mm-hmm. It is a cool way that we have forgotten, the importance of, kind of like fermented food. I know you are super big on fermented food. I love fermented food. I eat it every morning. And it's something that our culture has forgotten and not incorporated. But I remember Crocs in my grandparents' basement. I've inherited some of those Crocs. And so it's cool that we can carry some of those on if we learn some of those practices. And it's one way to kind of keep, you know, our health going, which is exciting that we can do things for ourselves like that.
Yeah. If any of your listeners are like, oh my gosh, what is this fermentation stuff they're talking about? Yeah. You should buy the book, The Art of Fermentation. Oh, it's by an author named Sandor Katz. And he has a gorgeous story of being diagnosed with HIV, I think in the 70s or 80s, and then moving to a, you know, quote unquote hippie commune and learning how to ferment his own kefir, his own sauerkraut. I mean, literally he has a recipe book about all these different ways to ferment different vegetables. And within a very short period of time, he reversed all of his literally clinical laboratory evidence of having HIV.
That's crazy.
So again, this connection to your immune system and optimizing immune function, our bacteria are really at the forefront of dictating who has allergies, who has food sensitivities, who gets psoriasis, who gets eczema, who gets rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, it is exquisite, the deep connection. And, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to perfectly cure everything. Do you have to go live on a hippie commune and, you know, grow your own organic food? I lean towards yes, if that's where you know, if you want to be the picture of health, you kind of have to work in some of those things. But I'm right there with you, Dawn, the middle of the road. I don't like anybody to have to feel guilty or bad about, or this idea of perfection. So, you know, let's get real and practical with, you know, how do artificial sweeteners sneak into somebody's diet? You know, how dependent or habit forming can they be? Right. What does the literature suggest about that, et cetera? So,
yeah, I think let's move into that. The artificial sweeteners, how bad are they for, you know, our gut health and our metabolism? How does that change for a weight loss surgery patient?
I would say there are different types of artificial sweeteners, and I don't necessarily know the best way to categorize them, but, you know, aspartame, for example, is, you know, chemically derived. There's another, you know, version, I remember like Sweet and Low, for example, and it basically looks like a sugar molecule, but one of the, you know, carbohydrate groups is just replaced with like a chloride ion or something. And so it's like, it's very simple, chemical changes that, again, there's many different ways to think about it. And remember, these were originally invented to try to help people in a good way. It's just now we're observing this consequence, right? So that's how everything that, you know, we've ever done in history has always been a well-intended kind of thing. It's not like we're all being malicious. No. And then it's just observed, oh, we tipped it the wrong way. Turns out, you know, we can't manipulate this and get a perfect outcome. So that's kind of how I feel about artificial sweeteners. They were well-intended, non-calorie, but the consequences are kind of many. And so one of them is by consuming them. Now they're hyper palatable. Yep. Hyper palatable is this, you know, kind of big word that just means they taste too good to be true to the human brain. So we have a lot of foods like that, a lot of processed foods that have natural flavors, additives, right? I mean, I think people are probably familiar now with MSG. MSG is actually a byproduct of fermented fish guts. It's like a really salty umami chemical that just makes us want to eat more of something. But there is a condition where a person will start to eat these unnaturally sweet things. And sweet is our, you know, highest dopamine reward center. So it can create this kind of addictive behavior towards them. And so if you listeners are consuming, say, a, you know, sugar-free something as part of your treat to yourself, ask yourself, can I go without this? You know, and then what happens? You know, do you start to crave it? Do you start to mentally think about all the ways that you want to get it? So there is an association with more cravings with people that eat chemically flavored processed kind of food. And again, there's no such thing as perfection. It's just a side effect of those things. Likewise, there's different types of sweeteners out there, right? So now there's stevia. So stevia, there's monk fruit. There are different sugar alcohols and things. And I would say that they're kind of in their own little unique categories. And, you know, the research still isn't perfect. We don't really know what each individual constituent's effects are. And honestly, the stuff is kind of hard to study. So some of the, you know, double-blinded trials out there are kind of inconclusive. They study the microbiome before they give people a, you know, they call it a respectable dose, but again, we don't know what this dose is. We don't really know what the dose dependent effect is to having a negative consequence. And then they study the stool afterwards. And in some studies, artificial sweetener use, including stevia, including aspartame, did result in fewer populations of beneficial gut bacteria. One study cited a 50% reduction. But again, it's so hard to control for all of these variables because as humans, our nervous system, if we get really stressed out, that can cause a 50% reduction in beneficial gut bacteria. So there's so many other factors that are hard to study. So what I think is compelling is the lab rat studies where they can control for that. And then you're studying more or less the mechanisms. And so we have that in lab rats. We've seen them eat more. So by consuming these they're either called non-nutritive or non-calorie, you know, artificial sweeteners, we've seen in rat studies, rats will then go and consume more calories than those who aren't eating them. And I think that's interesting because, you know, that really contradicts the whole reason why we even invented them in the first place. We invented them to replace sugar, not to actually promote or increase your ability to eat more and to be more hungry. But again, I think that goes into play with some of that hyper palatability and almost addictive nature of food that can sometimes happen when we're eating more processed stuff. There really is this kind of dopamine response that gets, you know, passed on through the brain, and it's kind of more like a drug than it is a nourishment. So those are just some of the things that I've seen in the literature that I like to warn people about. And, you know, again, right after bariatric surgery, most of my patients report that their taste buds change and that, you know, even their sugar alcohol protein shake, which they used to love, is too sweet for them after surgery. And I'm like, this is wonderful. Let's take advantage of this time period because, you know, the microbiome, the taste buds on your tongue, there's receptors for those in the gut as well. And so again, I think that there is a lot of changes and interconnectedness. Again, it's really a chemical language, a biochemical language. So let's take advantage of that. You know, let's see what we can do to try to really hold the brakes on trying to re-add that stuff back in. I'll tell you, the people that have the Crystal Light addiction, my heart breaks for them because, again, that's just kind of a daily Kool-Aid habit. And, you know, I was a child in the 80s and 90s. I remember Kool-Aid. You know, that's really when all this processed food really took off. And so again, from the human experience, not the rat mechanism experience, we have such nostalgic attachment to our experiences, you know, and our brains really paint this picture of safety, love, happiness. And so all of these emotions get overlapped with these experiences of sweet. And so it just gets hard for people. So hopefully this discussion is really just kind of being like, oh yeah, all of these things are connected. And again, is there a magic answer? No, but I think if you can avoid eating them every day, you're already winning. Again, I think the word on the street is it takes about 3 days to repair the gut lining because it's only one cell thick. So I would think if you're, you know, eating these things on a frequency that's around once every 3 to 4 days or a couple of times a week, you're probably going to be fine without any of these crazy consequences or any of this like food addiction or eating too many calories kind of thing. Yep. But I do think that it does hold some truth or some merit if you're one of those people that's always doing the sugar-free coffee creamer or always doing the sugar-free Crystal Light, you know, like that's probably the frequency of use where I'd be like, all right, let's pay attention and let's do a little experiment.
Yes.
You know,
and yeah, because you think about then they have their protein shake. If they're still in that phase, if they have their coffee, their Crystal Light, their protein shake or a protein bar, pudding, Jell-O, I mean, all those things that they go to, whether full of nutrition or not, it's options that, you know, humans use. So in the course of a day, I literally have patients drinking a gallon of fluid and every ounce of it has artificial sweetener.
Yeah.
To me, that's a problem.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd be like that needs some pause. That needs some reflection. And again, as an experiment, can we go 2 weeks without that stuff? And of course it's hard because people really, again, you go through a withdrawal. Again, you don't even understand or fully appreciate how strong these associations are. The other thing is, you know, in my coaching program, food quality, nutrient density is priority number one. Calorie goal is number two. And then number three is always like, okay, now what are you missing? What do you wish you had? Like, what are those old favorite things that, you know, you need to work back in? And, you know, sweetness in their coffee is almost always a thing. And what we always compromise on is, well, can you try a little bit of honey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at first they're kind of freaked out thinking like, oh no, I can't eat honey. Right. And almost everybody can tolerate it. They need hardly anything. Yep. And again, real honey, not pasteurized, not sugared, not watered down, but real honey. Again, you're getting pollen from the, plants. Yes. You're getting a natural made, you know, substance. You feel so satisfied by eating it and it doesn't trigger addictive eating or consuming more calories. And they are so pleasantly surprised. And, I'm just tickled. I'm like, honey is always a good go-to option. And again, just be really careful with it. You know, you don't want to cause dumping, of course, but again, usually you're so satisfied.
It doesn't take much.
No. And, you know, I mean, I love vegetables clearly, but you know, do we have to steam vegetables and eat them where they're not palatable and, you know, boring? No. So sometimes, you know, you want a little vinaigrette. What's the best thing to add to a vinaigrette? But honey.
Oh, definitely.
A tiny little dash. Yep. And then what do you want to do? But you can feed all the vegetables to children if you put a little bit of honey on it, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, that's kind of my stance. You know, yes, we don't have to go perfectly sugar-free. We don't have to do all this stuff, but let's really be considerate and thoughtful about, you know, what the impacts are.
Yep. Yeah. Because if you have surgery, all patients go into surgery with the goal of weight loss. Very few, a very small percentage, I would say, are doing it maybe just for diabetes and they truly could care less about the weight. Most people I find, even if they're doing it for diabetes or another health condition, they still care deep down about the weight. So across the board, everyone is concerned about how this is going to impact that number on the scale. And if you have weight loss surgery with that in mind, you would want, if you understood deep enough, you would want to protect that because the magic that the surgery does by shifting the microbiome, you would want to load up on your vegetables and load up on those fibers to really grow that in your favor and get that good bacteria going, not submerge it full of artificial sweeteners that can create an imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, that first year after surgery, most people can eat just about anything, feel restrictions, still lose weight. And it's a great honeymoon period.
Yeah.
And in the clinic, you know, people, can reliably come into us for about the first year, and then they kind of trickle off. And that's why I really created this online coaching program, because I really wanted to capture the people that, you know, felt like they didn't really have support from their program anymore, you know, wanted to go further. And the impact has just been so beautiful, so dramatic. In as little as 2 weeks, people are having less bloating, less reflux, diarrhea is resolving, constipation is resolving, they have more energy. And again, we're allowing them to eat fruit and we're giving them a little bit of honey, you know, and they're like, oh, wow. And I'm like, yes, this is what happens when you eat a highly nutritious, you know, whole foods diet that, you know, has less rules than what diet culture has put on us, but has so much more authentic nutritional support.
Yeah. And when it comes down to it, if, you know, we both agree, we don't have to require perfection to still get great results.
Absolutely.
That we can still have our humanness and have those moments when we just do whatever you did when you were a child or whatever you did as an adult and be irresponsible, and you're still going to be okay.
Yeah. And again, choices for the decision of this brings me pleasure in the moment, I'm okay with. I think that's great. Versus kind of mindless things or just daily habits because they're habits and you don't even think about it, you know? Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know our time is getting close here. So if we, big picture, if we think about the gut microbiome, weight loss surgery, artificial sweeteners, in your best recommendations, how would you lay that out for a patient so that they understand kind of the basics? Why would I not? Why would I want to avoid this? What are the things, what are the consequences or what are the risks that I'm taking by making those choices? Like, I can't give up my Crystal Light every day. I'm just not going to do it. So what am I claiming as my consequence potentially down the road?
I think, you know, again, not to pick on Crystal Light exclusively, but the artificial sweetener that is in the product, such as Crystal Light, is the one that I fear the most for my own personal consumption and one that I stay well away from. Yep. You also see that same artificial sweetener in yogurts that aren't nutritious and actually yogurts like Yoplait or Dan and Lightenfit or, you know, again, other, and those are very highly processed foods that are also relatively very inexpensive compared to say a more natural food product.
Yep.
I do avoid them. And the consequence of eating them, especially daily, I think is all those things that we mentioned that are cited in the literature. And again, I see it in patients. You actually run the risk of bringing back type 2 diabetes. It impacts glucose regulation because your body is getting, you know, missignaled. It doesn't exactly spike your blood sugar the way sugar would. And again, you'd have to eat quite a bit to kind of do that. But instead what happens is it affects the microbiome cell signaling that then like also affects, and it's fun because this is all part of serotonin pathways in the body. So, again, just reflect on this. Are you a person that consumes Crystal Light very regularly? Are you a person that also experiences depression and anxiety and mood, instability? Because I think there's going to be a huge overlap there. And then, you know, likewise, are you a person that, has been able to monitor your body weight, be happy with your body weight and not experience body weight regain? Because there is that laboratory, again, rat study, basic science association, that people who consume that category of artificial sweeteners are the ones that end up eating more calories at the end of the day than those who don't. So I think those are the big reasons to stay away from it. I warn all of my surgery patients before and after, if this is a really big habit. I mean, I know so many of you did so many awesome things for your health, getting ready for surgery. All I got to say is yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And then also, what are the other alternatives? Mm-hmm. I find that sugar alcohols that are in some of our protein shakes don't do this. They actually don't. They don't trigger, eating more or, some of that kind of like, again, diabetes kind of blood sugar inflammation kind of picture. And they don't seem to do that in the literature either. There's a product out there right now that I find very intriguing. It's called Olipop.
I don't think I've seen that.
So it's a soda. But it's not very carbonated, and they use a lot of prebiotic fibers like chicory and inulin and things like that. Has a tiny little bit of juice. I'd say one can runs you around 40 calories, 9 grams of fiber, and they are sweetened with stevia like sweeteners. But again, to get 9 grams of a prebiotic fiber is amazing, and they taste pretty good, and they're not terribly artificially flavored. A lot of times, it's like, a little bit of a juice concentrate plus something else. But anyway, so you can still find, I would say, healthier alternatives than foods that have virtually no nutritional value.
Yes.
So it's kind of like a value add. And that's actually the way that I love thinking about the gut microbiome versus diet mentality. So a microbiome diet-minded person is always looking for what they can add, what else they can eat. Yeah. I mean, this is exactly, I can eat more of this today. Yeah. And it's just a dramatically different mindset. It's more abundant.
Yes.
It's more like all of these options are available to me. And I think it's a fun practice because it translates into life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What more, what more exercise can I do? What more
volunteer? Positive.
It's way more positive. Yeah. And I'm just inherently an infectiously positive person. But yes, I love that. Versus like the diet, kind of dieting mentality is like, oh, I can't have that. Yeah. Oh, nope, that's not on the menu, right? And I see a lot of people do that when they say they're committed to keto. Oh, well, I can't have an apple. Apple's not on keto. I'm like, an apple has 7 grams of fiber a day. Yes, you can. Eat the damn apple.
Yes.
it's funny the boxes we put ourselves in. And so again, this sweetener kind of discussion, it's not about putting it in a box. And I didn't mean to pick so intensely on Crystal Light.
No.
But that is one of the most commonly used products that I see after bariatric surgery. And just full disclosure, it's not a health food. It's not giving you anything. If anything, it's probably taking things away. So how can you, still enjoy a Crystal Light every now and then, but also have a really healthier perspective on growing that precious gut microbiome garden by adding other things in.
Yep. Agreed. I think that's awesome. I think that is a great way to look at kind of the whole food perspective after weight loss surgery and how we can empower them to feel like they have options and not feel so rigid and strict and, diet culture, like you're saying. That's, again, they're professionals at it. They have dieted their whole life. So it's hard to break that mindset sometimes. But I think the more we talk about those things and the more we open it up and we say, okay, if you're going to, you're afraid to have starches and fruits and, any type of fiber or things like that, they're open that up and just slowly introduce some of these safer things based on what it's made of. And then it makes it less intimidating so that you don't fear that that's going to interrupt what your success plans are for.
Yeah. I mean, I just love listening to how excited my clients get and also how, apprehensive they are. Mm. But then, several months in and they're like, I'm maintaining this 20 pounds we lost with you. And I'm still enjoying strawberries and a banana once a day, I'm like, yes, you can. Right. Absolutely. So, thank you for having me, Dawn.
Yes. I appreciate so much for you joining me and, kind of breaking it all down and letting people understand the big picture of artificial sweeteners and, the importance of maybe monitoring what you're doing, so that you can be successful long-term. So that's awesome. Thank you. And then I know you mentioned this at the beginning, but maybe tell the audience again, how they find you.
So artofbariatrics.com. Hopefully that's pretty simple and straightforward.
I can put it in the show notes for him
too. Perfect. Yeah. And you know, we're always trying to host webinars on similar topics like this and just provide information in general. I know we have a big blog calendar coming up with different topics relating to bariatric surgery. So hopefully you guys will find some good information there. I've also published a workshop, a gut brain axis workshop on the website, which you can listen to for free. It's four parts, but it's all things gut microbiome and all things, how does our nervous system and our body co-create this like beautiful, healthy organism? So it's not just diet. Diet's really important, but it's also how do we take care of our mental and emotional health? And then likewise on Instagram and Facebook is where we're most active. Again, we're just Art of Bariatrics.
Awesome.
And yeah, we look forward to connecting with anybody who wants to connect with us.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll chat again.
Oh, I know we will, sister.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.